my first order. What's the first thing I should do? So Shaul Bal says to him, the first thing you should do is, you should appoint a heir to the throne. You should live very long. You'll have many years being king. Long live the king. But you've got to put in place already straight away that there's an heir to the throne. He says, but what should I do? I only have daughters. I don't have a son. So who should I appoint to be? Who will be the heir to the throne? Who will be the next king? So Rav Shaul Bal told him, it's not a problem. You'll choose a son-in-law. Someone who's fitting to become one day become the king of Poland. And he'll be the heir to the throne. Your daughter will marry that boy. And that person will be one day, of course, after many, many, many years, he'll become the next king. So he liked the idea, and he went away. And then this new king, the nephew, thought to himself like this. He says, I know. I've got an idea. Who could be the son-in-law? Who could be the one to marry my daughter to one day be an heir, to one day become the king of Poland? Who is that? So he said he knew that Rav Shaul Bal had a son called Menachem. So what? And he was a bright boy. He was clever. He was handsome. And he thought, that's great. I'll marry my daughter, this nephew, the new king says, to Rav Shaul Bal's son Menachem. And then, great, one day we'll have of course, we'll have to change his religion. That shouldn't be as much of a problem. We'll have to change him. We can't have another from Jew becoming a king of Poland. That was bad. We had for one day, but we can't have that again. But that shouldn't be a problem. We'll change his religion. He'll marry my daughter. And one day he'll take over and become king of Poland. Now, he kept this very secret, or so he thought, because he obviously didn't want Rav Shaul to find out about what his plans are. But you know how it goes. A secret means, Rav Huttner said, you know, a secret means like this. A secret is something when one person tells only one person at a time, and he tells him, and he tells him. That's a secret. As opposed to a non-secret is something which you say in public. That's the difference between a secret and a non-secret. So it didn't take long. And soon Rav Shaul Bal heard this dreadful idea, this terrible idea that the new king wants his son Menachem to marry the daughter of this nephew. Chas v'shalom, a goy, it can't be. I've got to think, what can we do? How am I going to get out of it? He won't understand if I tell him that we can't marry goyim and we this. He won't understand that. And he's thinking. And he's, oh, I've got it. In the Polish constitution, it says that the heir to the throne can't be someone who's already been married before. So if I get my son married, and I haven't got much time, because any minute I know, any hour, today probably still, this new king's going to come with his suggestion. If I find quickly a shidduch for my son Menachem, and I, not only a shidduch, I get him married, really, really quickly, then hopefully we'll be able to get out of it. So he asked around, and they found there was a woman who was very, very ill. She was on her deathbed. She was a lot older than this Menachem, but she was on her deathbed. And the Chevra Kedisha was standing round her bed. She was mamish, nearly passing on to Olam Haba, to a better world. And Rav Shaul Bal comes in, and he goes over to the woman and he says to her, will you be maskin to do one last mitzvah? She says, what's that? Will you agree to marry my son Menachem? And he's taken aback. The Chevra Kedisha standing there, marry his son. Yeah, that will be a great mitzvah for you. And then, you know, that's great. Please be maskin, I beg you. So she thinks for a second and she says, okay, I'm going to do it. I'll do it. And they quickly set up four poles, and they set up a chuppah round her deathbed. And they got a ring from somewhere, and Hara and there were Edim, there was a minion, quickly got a minion together, Hara and Mokudeshli with the Baal Zuk, that's Moshe Yisrael, and they got married. And she was still on her deathbed, and a few hours later, the Rav Shaul gets called to come to the king. And the king says to him, Reb Shaul, I have the greatest idea of who I can appoint as the heir to the throne of Poland. And that is, Reb Shaul's listening, yeah, who's that? None other than your son, Menachem. And Reb Shaul says, my son, he makes as if he doesn't know anything. My son, Menachem, to marry who? To marry your daughter. Oh, what a shame. You've come just a bit too late. He says, what do you mean too late? Why have I come too late? What have I done? He says, you're too late. Because my son is married already. And in the Polish constitution, it says that the heir to the throne can't be someone who's already been married. He says, your son Menachem's married? I didn't see any invitation. I didn't see any wedding, any chasna. What's going on? He says, no, you just missed it. When? What? When? Well, a few hours ago, he got married. So the king smiled. He knew. He knew what had happened. But there was nothing he could do about it. Absolutely nothing. His whole idea had gone down the drain. And Baruch Hashem, Menachem was saved from having to chas v'shalom even enter the idea of marrying a goy. 3 years passed. 3 years, true story, 3 years later, there's a knock on Reb Shaul's door. And there's a woman standing there. It was none other than this woman who was on her deathbed. She had had a mamash, it was a ness. Since she did this mitzvah, she made a miraculous recovery. And she says, maybe. And she was well. She was walking around. She was well. She totally recovered from her illness. And she says, can I speak to my husband, please? Menachem. And Shaul says, when he realizes who she is, he's, yeah, what do you want? So he says, well, I want to live together with my, you know, Menachem, my husband. So Shaul says, well, you know, really, it was only just to get him out of having to chas v'shalom marry the king's daughter. It wasn't really supposed to be a proper shidduch. He says, what do you mean? We got married. Can I speak to him, please? So he has no choice. And she goes and she speaks. She's way older than this Menachem, way older. Years and years older. And she says to him, like this, Menachem, we got married. So Menachem says, yeah, and he doesn't know where to put himself, this lady. He doesn't know her. And what was your name again? She says, her name was Malka. Malka says, listen, well, we got married, didn't we? So he says, no, but you know, my father told you, it wasn't really supposed to get married, it was just to get out of the whole problem we had. So she says to Menachem, do you believe in Ashkocha Protis? He says, of course. So he says, do you not believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu led this to happen? It's true you did it because of this to get out of the problem. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged this. So do you not believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing? He says, of course I do. He says, but you know, Shaul wanted for his son someone with great yichus. He says, I also have great yichus. My uncle is the Ramah, the Rav of Krakow. So Shaul says, listen, seems like we're not getting rid of this. He offered her. He says, you know what, I'll give you a lot of money, and we'll do a divorce. He can give a get to this woman. And she wasn't having it. So since there was no choice, they traveled to Krakow, to Ramah. And she tells the Ramah what's happened. And the Ramah says, listen, I can't force you to do anything, but I would suggest that you do go ahead and marry this woman properly. And I give you a bracha. You'll have great Talmidei Chachamim coming out from you if you marry her. But it's your choice. And Menachem's... No, she was older than him. Not old. She was no, she was just years older than he was. Yeah. And he gave that bracha. That if they get married, and he told them to take on the name to Umim. To Umim means twins. That's the name that they should take on, another surname now. To Umim. And he thought about it, and he thought, what's the right thing to do? I'm going to marry someone who's way older than me, but the Ramah's giving a bracha. What should I do? And in the end, he decided he's going to get married. And they made another, Ramah told him to make another chuppah. And they made another chuppah. And they made another chasna. And they got married properly. And they had a daughter. And when this daughter grew up, she married a big Talmud Chacham, and it says they had 12 sets of twins. Do you hear this? 12, I think, is that right? 12 sets of twins. They had the name Tum and the Ramanke and the Bracha. And from this family grew the greatest Talmid Chacham, and there are many, many, many Talmid Chacham who are related to this family of Tu'umim, many, many Talmid Chachamim, and Tucker brought out the greatest Talmid Chachamim, all because he did this thing which wasn't easy, but the Ramah said it's a good idea to do, and he chose to do it. When I saw this story...
One more child. Kosovo Chos B'nai Yisrael.
The 25 children. 25. Very good, Shkoyach. And I thought to myself, which Pasha are you in? Re'ei, re'ei, anoichi meisen ifneichem, hayoim brocho klala. HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts choices in front of us. They're not always easy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu begs us and wants us, es ha-brocha, he wants us to get the brocha. Hashem tishmu'u al mitzvot Hashem aleikechem. If you do the right thing, you do the mitzvot Hashem aleikechem, then you get the brocha. And the Torah carries on with Chas Hashem, you don't do the right thing, va'klala im loisishmu al mitzvot Hashem aleikechem. It's all about choices. And I want to share with you a story that happened much, much more recently. Not long ago, this past Lag BaOmer, just before Lag BaOmer actually, in America, there was a Yid who I know who made a chasna. And he needed money, he's marrying off his daughter. And so what he tried to do was, he tried to remortgage his house to be able to borrow some money to pay for the chasna. And it was schlepping, you know how it goes, and taking long, long time. And the chasna was drawing close to Lag BaOmer, and the bank still hadn't given him the loan. So he approached his Rav in America, and he says, is there any way I just need to get through the chasna? Be'ez Hashem, I will have the money, and I will get the money, but is there any way you know someone who could lend me the money just now, so, and then I'll pay him back when the bank loan comes through. So the Rav says to him, if you haven't heard from me tomorrow afternoon, give me a call. And sure enough, the next morning, the Rav tells him after Shachris he should come into his room. And after Shachris, this Yid goes into the room and he sees the Rav's son sitting there. And he's a bit surprised because this is like quite private that he needs to borrow money. And the Rav's son was a Malamed, a Rebbe in a school in America, and he didn't seem to be this big, high-flying fellow who could lend this great few thousand dollars that this Yid needed. But he can't say anything. The Rav's obviously called him, and Rav knows what he's doing. And he sits there, and the Rav says to him, I found someone who will happily lend you the money till you get your bank loan, and that's my son. And I'll let him take over now. And the son turns to this Yid, and he says to him, I have to say thank you to you for two things. He says, you have to say thank you to me. If you're going to lend me the money, I have to say thank you to you. He says, no, I want to say thank you for two things. This is amazing. First thing is, of course, because you're giving me the opportunity this week, Sedra, to lend money, you're giving me the opportunity to do this mitzvah of lending you the money. That's the first thing. Okay. But listen to the second thing where he says, I want to say thank you. He said, you're probably wondering why I'm in a position to lend money, a few thousand dollars to you. I'm a Rebbe in a school and I barely make ends meet and I've got money to lend you. So I'll tell you. I've been saving up for the last few years for a house. I'm nowhere near my goal yet. So I've got a separate savings account and every month we try our best and we put a little bit of money into this savings account. And it's growing and it's growing. We're still nowhere near what we need for a down payment for a house. But we're trying. And I thought to myself like this. I'm not using the money now. So what does it harm me if I could do a mitzvah and I can help another Jew out? So why not? But I wanted to see how much money I had in my account. True story. So he went to the bank. And he said, because he only didn't get a statement every month for this savings account. He only got it once a year. So he had no idea exactly. He wanted to see how much money he's got. He goes to the bank, and he gives over his details. And he said, by the way, do you know that you've been withdrawing $300 every single day for the past 10 days? He said, what? Withdrawing what? Who? Where? He said, I don't even have a card on this account. I don't have a... So they looked it up, and they found out that someone in Amsterdam Again, this story is happening in America. Someone in Amsterdam had made some sort of card, a forgery card, and had been withdrawn for the last 10 days, every day, the maximum amount they could get out from, it was probably in euros, 300 euros each day, and he knew nothing about it. So they immediately closed down their account and opened up a new account with the money. And he said, I can't thank you enough. If I hadn't found out, if I hadn't gone to check, and there was no reason why I should go and check my account in the middle, why should I go and check my account? What for? And because of you asked, my father came to me and said, you want to borrow some money? So I went and I checked, and Baruch Hashem, it saved. I only lost, I don't know if he got that back or not, I don't know that, but if he actually managed to get the 3,000 euros back, but Baruch Hashem, the rest of his savings were saved. So we see again, person has a choice. He could have said, oh, why should I bother take money out of my savings account? Who says I will get it back? And he chose, he says, look, this yid needs help now. He's got, Be'ez Hashem, he will pay back. I'm not using the money now. Why not help another yid out? And not only did he get the great schar of a mitzvah, but he also saved his own money. Now, we know as well, when we have these choices in front of us, and it's not always easy, and that, but we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is helping us. Chazal say, Imole HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oizroi, Eina Yocholoi. We can't do anything with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the question remains is, why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to help us? We do so many things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu owes it to us? Of course not. Why? Hashem doesn't owe us anything. But we do have something special, something on our side. And that is Chus Ovois. And I want to share with you an amazing story. An amazing story where we're going to learn lots of things in the story, but we're going to see how powerful the Schus Ovois is. And I'll start straight away with the story. There was a famous, we've all heard of the Dubna Maggid and his Mesholim. And one, this is a story about the Dubna Maggid. And the Dubna Maggid traveled once to a town. And he gets them. And remember, those days, people didn't know what people looked like. It wasn't like today, where we've got every week a whole photos of all the Gedolim, and we know what they look like. People didn't know what Gedolim looked like, what great people looked like. So the Dubna Maggid, Rabbi Yaakov, arrived in this town, and he goes to his host, and he hears by his host that this, the Dubna Maggid's in town. I mean, it's not him. He wasn't planned to speak anything at all. He hears that there's a big drosha going to take place on Shabbos in Shul by the famous Dubna Maggid. And he's the Dubna Maggid. So he didn't say anything. Didn't say a word. Didn't say anything. He thought, he'll go to Shul and he'll see. So he goes to Shul and he sits down. Shabbos morning, someone gets up. A total imposter, fake fellow gets up. And he starts giving a drosha. And the drosha was a good one. You know why it was a good one? It was a drosha that this fellow had heard from the real Dubna Maggid. So he's giving over this drosha, and it's so far so good. The problem started when he finished this drosha, and this fellow who's speaking started adding his own stuff. And that wasn't so good. And it bordered on apikorosus, kfira, and at that point, the real Dubna Maggid, Rabbi Yaakov, couldn't take it. He stood up. True story, in the middle of Shul, he stood up in the middle of Joshua, and he went to the bima, and he banged on the bima. He says, Rabbosai, this fellow's an imposter, he's a fake. He's not the real Dubna Maggid. And the fellow from on top, he says, yes I am, what do you mean? Don't believe this fellow. Who is he anyway? I'm the Dubna Maggid. And he says, he's not. He says, I am. Backwards and forwards. And no one, there was big commotion in the whole Shul, no one knew what to do. So the real Dubna Maggid, Rabbi Yaakov, says, you know what? Let's make a test. And we'll see who the real Dubna Maggid is. You know, everyone knows, that the Dubna Maggid was famous for his mashalim. He could, off the cuff, out of his sleeve, he could pull out a mashal. So he says, you know what? On the bima, there was svarim. There was a siddur chumash. A siddur and a chumash. He says, you know what? Let's open up the siddur to anywhere. And we'll open up the Chumash to anywhere. And the one of us who can ask a question, B'derach Moshel, on where we open up to the Siddur. And ask a question, B'derach Moshel, on where we open up the Chumash to
and connect the two together, and with the marshal answer everything, then you'll know he's the real Dumma Maggid. Right? So they did that. And they open up the Siddur, quite topical because we're coming up to it soon, to what we're going to say soon in Slichas, Misha Ono La Avram Avinu Bahar HaMariah Hu Ya'anenu. That's what they open the Siddur to. Misha Ono La Avram Avinu, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you answered Avram Avinu Bahar HaMariah Hu Ya'anenu, he should answer us as well. That's what it said in the Siddur. Then they open up the Chumash. And the Chumash came out to a pasuk in Parshas Ki Tse'itzeh, also coming up soon. So like this, it says, Lo Yovoi Amoini Moavi Bikal Hashem. People from Amoin and Moav, the men, they can't marry Bikal Hashem. Gam Doi Asir, even the 10th generation, Lo Yovoi Lehem Bikal Hashem Ad Oilam, they can never marry into the Klal Yisrael. Why, says the pasuk Al-Davar, and this is important, says two reasons. Why can't we marry into Amoin and Moav? So it says two reasons. Number one, you were hungry and you were thirsty and you asked them for bread and for water and they refused to give it to you. When we were coming out of Mitzrayim, we wanted that and Amoyin and Moyav refused to give us bread and water. Reason number one. Now reason number two. And they hired Bilam to curse you. Okay? That was the pasuk they opened up. They asked the fake Dumma Maggid, what do you have to say about these? Stone silence, nothing, garnished. So they turned to the real Dumma Maggid, Rabbi Yaakov, and he says, I'll tell you. There was once a very wealthy man, and he only had one daughter. And he found a shidduch for her, Baruch Hashem, there was a big mazel tov. And the chosim was from a distant town, and the preparations were well underway. He was sewing clothes for the kala, his daughter, and making clothes for the chosim, and preparations were well underway. And he needed he had a team of tailors working in his house, and the head tailor said to the rich man, "We need another few meters of a certain type of wool." So he sent one of his servants immediately to go to the shop where he buy the wool, the materials. And he goes and he says, we need 3 meters of this and this wool. No problem. He gets the wool and he cuts it. And at the same time, he takes out 100 gold coins. And he says, I'm not going to be able to come to the chasna. It's far away. And I'm a good friend. And you're the rich man is a very, very good customer of mine. Please take this as a present for the young couple. Fine. He takes it and he goes. There was a poor man who was watching this whole scene. And he sees you buy 3 meters of a certain type of wool. And you get 100 gold coins. That seems to be quite a good deal. So he scrapes together his few kopecks that he has. And he says, that wool, you know, that wool over there can have 3 meters of it. Fine. The fellow cuts it out and he makes it, gets it for him. And he gives it to him and he pays for it. And then he just stands there and he's waiting. And he says, what are you waiting for? Ikka chosem en ha-sefer, you haven't given me the main thing here. Where's the 100 gold coins? He says, what are you talking about? You bought some wool and you've paid for it and I've given you the wool. He says, well, actually, I saw what happened before. That servant that came in, he bought the same wool, the same amount, and you gave him 100 gold coins. He says, oh, you don't understand. He says, that person, he's a servant of a wealthy man who buys from me thousands and thousands of gold, spends in my shop thousands and thousands of gold coins every year. And he's making a chasna of his only daughter. So of course, I would love to go. I can't go, so I've given him a present. I've given a present for the young couple. But you, the first time you stepped in my shop, I don't give 100 gold coins. I can close down today. Said the Dumna Maggid, in Slichas, what do we say? Misha onol Avram Avinu b'amariya. Kshbaruch Hu answered Avram Avinu. Therefore, he should answer us. Now, ask the Dumna Maggid, it doesn't make sense. Avram Avinu, who was Makis Boiroi, who was ready to take his took Yitzchak and put him in our Akedah on the Mizbeach, ready to shecht his only son, and he did everything Shaloya Amonos Lekabel Scha. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he asked, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him. That makes sense, that's good. Therefore, because Misha Anal Avom Avinu Bahamariya, therefore Hashem should answer us. Are we anything? We're millions of miles away from Avram Avinu. We're so far from Avram Avinu. Why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer us just because he answered Avram Avinu? That was the Dubna Magid's Kasha. Says the Dubna Magid, I'll continue the Moshul. And he says like this, they had everything ready for the Chasna. And it was winter time. And they had to travel. The rich man went ahead with his contingent, his servants. And on the way, there was a big lake. And you know, in those days, the lakes got frozen over and you could just travel over the lakes. And he got across. And he was like a good few hours ahead of the Kala and his wife and the rest of them. And he, Bashem, got across this river. But unfortunately, when the Kala and the mother and their contingent arrived in the middle of the lake, the ice cracked. And they fell in, and Baruch Hashem, they managed to actually get them out. People from nearby came and helped, and they schlepped them out. They were unconscious. And one of the servants ran ahead to tell the rich man what happened. And the rich man was worried, and you say, what's going on? What's taking him so long? He says, my master must tell you something terrible's happened. He says, what's happened? Tell me quick, what's happened? He says, all the food, the rogalach, and the kuchen cakes, and the herring, and all those things, what happened? The ice cracked and it all fell to the bottom of the river. He said, is that all? No, it's worse. No. All the clothes, the thousands and thousands of gold coins spent on the clothes, they're all lost. The colors, dress, everything's at the bottom. But tell me, is my wife all right? Is the color all right? Unfortunately, my master, they also fell in. But Baruch Hashem, the doctors think they'll be okay. We managed to get them out. We managed to save them from the water, but they'll need time for recovery. And the obvious question is like this. This servant has got it all mixed up. The rich man doesn't care about the rogalach and the food. He doesn't care about the clothes. He cares only about how the health, how is his wife, how is his color, how's the family? Are they all right? Are they alive? That's what he cares about. Says the Dubna Magid, the same we can ask on the pasuk we opened up the Chumash to. In Kiseitze it says, Layovay Amoinu Me'ovi Mikal Hashem. You mustn't marry Amoin Amoyov. Why not? Says the Torah, two reasons. The first reason is, says the Torah, you know why? Very upsetting. We needed bread and water, and he didn't give us bread and water. Second reason, you know why? Because they hired Bilam to destroy us, to kill us. Same problem. The main reason is why we can't marry them, is because they hired Bilam to destroy us, to kill us, to annihilate us, to get us off the map. That's the reason we can't marry Amalek. Because they didn't give the bread, it sounds a bit like in the Moshul. You know what? Terrible, my master. You know what happened? The food and the rogalach fell to the bottom of the water. That's not the Ikka. That might have happened as well. They lost the food, they lost the clothes. That's true. But the main thing is the people. Why does the Torah ask the Dona Magid tell us that the reason we can't marry Amon Amos is because of Shaloi Kidmu Valechem of Amayim? What does it mean? Says the Dona Magid, we have to continue with our story. The Chasna date was pushed off, obviously, till they recovered. But Baruch Hashem, there was total recovery. Everyone recovered. And they made a Chasna. What a Chasna. 20-piece band. You can't imagine that the chasna is a beautiful, beautiful chasna. Now, after the chasna, the chosen, remember, he was a big, big, budding Talmud Chacham, and all he wanted to do was learn. And he sat down, and his father-in-law supported him. And he was learning and learning. Now, the problem is the rich man's daughter wasn't used to this so much. She was used to going out shopping and going on hikes and going on sightseeing. And whenever she wanted him to come along, he didn't really want to come along because he wanted to learn. That's all he wanted to do, was to learn and more and more and more. So he went a little bit out with her, but she wasn't happy. It was never enough. And it just wasn't going. It wasn't going. Because she wanted to just be honeymooning the whole time, and he wanted to sit and learn. And eventually it got so bad that he moved out, and he rented himself a little flat, and he sat there and he learned. And at the beginning, the rich man used to send food to the flat, because the rich man hoped that they would come back together again, get back on together again. But it didn't happen. So soon he stopped sending him even food, and he was starving. And then the rich man got even more worried, because he was scared. He said like this, probably this chosen, if I ask him to divorce my daughter, he's going to ask for loads and loads of money, and he'll make me poor. I don't want that. So he traveled to a nearby town, and there was a kishufmacher, like a witch, who could put spells on people. And he paid a hoin rav, a huge amount of money, and he said, I want you to put a spell on my son-in-law that will make him die. Because that's the only way I can get out of having to pay a huge amount of money to divorce my daughter. Now, the son-in-law got wind of this. And before anyone could do anything, he raced in the middle of the night. He got a wagon and he raced out of the town and he went back. He went back to his town. He went back to his yeshiva where he used to learn. And eventually the rich man found out that his son-in-law has escaped, run off. And he hasn't given a get and his daughter's stuck. So he went with all tainas to the Rosh Hashiva. He found out the yeshiva. And he went to the Rosh Hashiva. He says, what's going on? You told me, I asked you originally if he's a good boy. And you told me he's such a good boy. And look what he's done. So Rosh Hashiva knew the whole story. And he says, look what he's done. Let's look at what you've done. Let's look at what you've done. You've half starved him, haven't you? You didn't even send him food at the end. So the rich man says, well, times aren't as good anymore. I used to have money, but, I lost money. So I couldn't send him food anymore. So Rosh Hashiva says to him, don't give me any tales. I know, we all know, that you hired that kishufmacher, and you paid an exorbitant amount of money to that man, that whoever it was, to put a spell on my Talmud. If you had money for that, you definitely had money to be able to give him food and drink and to help him out. Said the Dubna Magid, Amoin Amoyav, you can't mind, of course, the Ikar reason, the main reason is, why? Because they hired Bilam to destroy us. But it's like this, they could have given us, when we came out of Mitzrayim, when we asked them for food and drink, they could have, and they refused, so they could have maybe said, we haven't got enough bread for ourselves. There's a famine going on. There's no water. No. If you've got money, all that money to hire Bilam, lekaleleko, to hire Bilam to come and curse the Yidden, then you certainly had money to pay for bread and water, and you could have, and you didn't do that. And therefore, for the Torah says, for those two reasons, you can't marry into Amon Amoyav. Klal Yisrael can't marry into Amon Amoyav. Says the Dubna Magid, this bocha carried on learning. He gave a get to this girl, the one he was married to, and then he carried on learning, and he became one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim. And there was another wealthy man who had a daughter who was Yirei Shamayim, who only wanted a husband who would sit and learn Torah his whole life. And they got married. And not long later, the Rav of the town where they lived was Nifta. He died. And they were looking for a new Rav, and the obvious choice was this man was the obvious choice. So they chose this bacha and they made him Rav, and he said, I'll be Rav, but on one condition, that I'm not taking any money from you. I'll be your Rav, I'll serve you faithfully, but I'm not taking any wage for being Rav. And he was Rav for them, and he was a great Rav for them. And not long later, he had a son. And by the bris, it was a beautiful simcha. The whole town rejoiced, and they all came to the bris and the suda. And by the suda, they presented the Rav with a letter They've been written by the Panasei, the ones who are in charge of the city, and they said, you've served us faithfully, and we hope you'll continue to serve us and be our Rav. And in appreciation for that, if this boy who's had his bris today will be Roy, if he'll be fitting to be a Rav when he grows up, Lachamei Ve'esrim of our present Rav, then we are ready right now that we will appoint him as the Rav. So the Rav reading it through, and he calls in the Panasei a bit late on in the day, he says, you've misunderstood. If my son was Roy and fitting to be a Rav when he grows up, then he, anyway, you have to make him the Rav. I've served you faithfully, and I haven't taken a penny from you. So if my son is fitting and Roy to be Rav, of course you have to take him as Rav. That's not giving me anything. If you really want to give me a present, you need to change this letter, and you need to write like this. If your son, even if he isn't as great as you are for us now, obviously he has to know how to paskin and he has to know how to learn, he's be a Talmud Chacham, that we are ready to say now that we're going to make him Rav. That will be something special for me. That will be a real present for me. Says the Dubna Magid. We asked the Kasha at the beginning, Misha Ono, La Avram Avinu Bahar Maria Hu Yanenu. And the Dubna Magid asked, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered Avram Avinu, therefore he should answer us. It doesn't make sense. Avram Avinu was Moisa Nefesh. He did everything Shalom HaMalas L'Kawe Pras. Teretz says the Dubna Magid is like this. If we would be on the same madrega as Avram Avinu, and we'd be as great as Avram Avinu, then of course, we don't need to beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Misha Ono La Avram Avinu, Hu Yaneinu, he should answer us. Because then, if we were as great and we were had Messias Nefesh Avram Avinu and his Midas and everything, then of course Hashem would answer us. It's only because we're not quite as great. We're trying to get there. We're on it. He says, Mosai Agiu, Maisav, Lemaisav, Oisav, Be'ed Hashem, Hashem will help us get on the way, go in that direction and get towards Avram Avinu. But then, that's why we're begging. We're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the S'chus Avos. Look what Avram Avinu did. He did Akedas Yitzchak. Look what he did for you. And he did it all. Shaloyam last the Kabbalah Pros. He passed 10 tests. He passed all your tests you gave him. And because of that, we beg you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Misha Ono La Avram Avinu Bahamariyah, we beg you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the S'chus of Avram Avinu, the S'chus of voice, who Yaneinu should answer us as well. Ezra Hashem should answer all that for this table.